Welcome to Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jamp and Luke Cutforth.
Hello.
Hi, howdy.
This week, we're talking about just the tip.
Excuse me?
Yeah, just the tip. But before that, why don't we go into a little Apple review? This one says, this is a wee review. It's 5 stars, and it goes on to say, this is my favorite podcast. Definitely recommend. I've been listening every night for nearly 2 years. These guys have become a part of my routine. Thanks for creating such interesting and fun content. I'll never stop listening.
Oh, that's so sweet. Nice.
Thank you.
That's very nice, isn't it?
That's lovely. Yeah.
Now, something slightly less sweet. I've got a question for everyone. Now, if you're listening on Apple, or you're listening on Spotify, or any of the other places where you use your ears and not your eyes, head to YouTube and use your fingers to answer this question in the comments. The question is, are you circumcised? Or, if you don't have a penis or you'd rather not answer, let us know what time it is right now as you're hearing this, or watching this. What time is it right this second?
It's 5 to 1.
Good to know. So why don't we hop into the topic of today? So, can you guess what we're talking about?
Just the tip.
You're talking about the science of circumcision,
yes.
I would assume. Now, I stayed at Corey's house last night, and you didn't know this because you went to your room to have some chill-out time.
You
your neighbours were outside talking for about an hour about circumcision.
Now, Luke, when I told you that I was going to my room for some alone time, I'd actually hopped down to my neighbours and started talking to them about circumcision. It was dry running this episode.
Oh, I see.
Seriously, they were talking about
They were talking about circumcision for literally an hour. I was trying to watch The Office, and I was just like...
What was their stance?
I honestly can't remember. Every just so often, like, I'd be watching The Office US, and every so often I'd just hear, like, I'm circumcised, or I'm not circumcised, break through my consciousness. I was just like, shut up. But hey, now it's become useful as an anecdote I've used in this episode, so thanks, neighbours.
Oh my gosh, I'll thank them the next time I see them. So, before...
Loudly as well. So loudly.
I'm circumcised.
Before we get into it, I just want to tell everyone... I am uncircumcised, so I'm not speaking from a place of understanding circumcision personally. Just a heads up there. There
cool.
you go.
I'm also
want
the
picture,
same brethren.
You're here, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah? Luke, do you want to share anything?
Sure, I'm not circumcised.
Wow. 3 uncircumcised people talking about circumcision. Ugh. Where do we get off?
Where do you get off?
Together we can make a 12 skin.
What actually brings me to it. So, what is a foreskin?
A little bit of skin that covers the tip of your willy.
Yeah, yeah. So, it is that piece of skin that is on the sort of end of the penis. It covers the head of the penis. Mm. The glands, is it called? Are you aware of that? The glands?
Oh, yeah. G-L-A-N-S.
G-L-A-N-S. The glands.
Oh, glands.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it covers that. And almost every single mammal has a foreskin. Well, kind of a foreskin, right? Usually we'd call it a penile sheath outside of humans.
That's what I call it.
So outside of humans, we call it a penile sheath.
I shall now unsheath.
Why don't we call it that penis? For humans?
The reason we call it that... Okay, think about a dog penis for a second.
Yeah.
Yeah? Mm. We all picturing a dog penis, like a little lipstick going up.
Yeah.
Now, the penis goes into the penile sheath, right?
Yeah.
Right, and so most mammals have something more similar to that. Whereas humans don't have a penis that retracts entirely into the sheath. It's just...
Yeah, it's more
just,
of a coat.
Yeah, it's more... Like, I would think of it as a snood.
Like a turtleneck.
Yeah, like a little turtleneck. You roll it up over your face if you're feeling chilly, and you roll it back down when you want to, you know, when you want to expose yourself to the world.
Oh my God.
So... Foreskins develop obviously. They're not exactly the same throughout your entire life. So let's talk a little bit about this. So when a little male baby is born, henceforth we'll talk about little baby boys. We'll say when a baby boy's foreskin, when a baby boy comes out the womb, his foreskin is not going to be able to like retract, right? You can't pull that thing back. Do not try and pull it back.
Ooh.
You'll probably injure your little baby boy.
Yep.
And for the first few years of life, it doesn't actually retract, right? It's quite tight around the sort of head. And around the age of 3 or potentially later, but usually around the age of sort of 3, the foreskin starts to separate from the head. So up until that point, it's kind of like, it's kind of attached. It starts to separate from the age of about 3. And then by about 5 years old, that's when you get full separation. Yeah. And for some boys, it can take longer, but that doesn't necessarily mean there's a problem there. It's just difference in development. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. When did all of our foreskins? I don't know.
I don't remember.
I didn't even know this was a thing until just now. So that's very interesting.
You didn't know a foreskin was a thing.
Mine is yet to unsheathe.
Wait, you guys pull yours back? What? No.
What do you mean?
So now you understand what a foreskin is, generally, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
You become acquainted with that.
Good grub. Yeah.
What is circumcision?
Cutting it off.
Cutting it off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or trimming it. Is it off completely or is it trimmed?
It's off. Yeah. Well, actually, interestingly, we'll get to this in a little bit, but at one point it seems that it may not have been off and it may just have been trimmed. Oh. I'll talk about that in a little bit. But yeah, circumcision, it's just the removal of the foreskin. So about one third of men, estimated, are circumcised. And it's, as far as I'm aware, the oldest known surgical procedure on humans.
Wow.
Well, think about it. Like, in Judaism, it's a part of your covenant with God. So Judaism is a pretty bloody old religion. It dates back, like, way back when. You know, Abraham and his son Isaac, I believe. It's Isaac? Yeah. Abraham and Isaac.
That sounds right.
Yeah. You don't know?
Probably.
Okay, Abraham and Isaac, let's say then. So, yeah, I mean, it's an old, old thing. And that's baffling to me, right? That, like, you know, thousands of years ago, people were just taking knives to penises and
babies.
Everything turned out fine.
Yeah.
That's baffling to me. Not necessarily babies back then, I don't know. I don't think. I'm not sure. Ooh. Right? This is a tough one, right? I'm not so up on the history of it. I've had a little look into it, but I'm not entirely sure on that. So let's go through the procedure. So I'm going to talk about the procedure for adult circumcision. So if you're an adult and you want to get circumcised, you can absolutely do that. You can have it done pretty much any time of you can have it done pretty much any time of your life. So it's usually carried out just in one day. Like, you go in and then you get it done.
Yep.
You pop back home in the evening. Right. Yeah. So you don't need to stay in hospital for any sort of extended length of time. So you are not supposed to eat or drink for about 6 hours before the surgery. If you've got general anesthetic, that's kind of standard stuff. And once you're in the hospital, you'll meet the surgeon and anesthetist, and you know, they'll have you sign a consent form to make sure that you're ready to have that removed. Usually, you'll get general anesthetic as an adult. They'll just knock you out, but they could also give you a local anesthetic. They just inject some of that into your dick, and it stops you from feeling it for a while, obviously. And then sometimes they will give you a spinal anesthetic, which is something I've just found out about, which is you can't feel anything below your waist, which I feel like
a bit overkill, maybe.
Yeah, it's a bit overkill, right? General anesthetic, understand, because you don't want to be conscious for it, but like spinal anesthetic, just nothing below your waist. That feels scarier, if anything, to me. And usually it's pretty straightforward. It's you cut just behind the head with a scalpel, or with scissors, surgical scissors, not just like, you know, here, not
primary grab school, primary school scissors.
Grab a set of these and just go. A scalpel or surgical scissors, and they cauterize it for any bleeding, and they stitch together any sort of edges of skin with dissolvable stitches, which will obviously they don't need to be removed. They'll just sort of disappear on their own. So it's very straightforward. It's very simple. It doesn't take very long at all. Once you're out of hospital, once they've discharged you, it usually takes about 10 days to heal. And you're supposed to take probably around about 1 week off of work to recover. Although a couple of my friends in school were circumcised. I won't say their names, but they don't watch this. I can say whatever I want. A couple of my friends in school were circumcised when we were in high school. So we were like teenagers. And I don't recall them taking that length of time off at all. They just disappeared and then came back. And then a month later, we found out that they'd had circumcisions. So you'd usually be advised to take a week off. And apparently you should avoid sex for 4 weeks. So about a month after the operation. Obviously, masturbation and stuff is why you should avoid. You should avoid all of that. Just let it heal. I kind of want to talk now about, you know, once we've gone over what circumcision is, I kind of want to talk about why people are circumcised. And also when people are circumcised. So what do you think? Why are people circumcised?
I would imagine the medical reasons would be if you just have a bit too much. Maybe?
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Maybe you have a really long foreskin.
Like,
some
thinking
people
about...
do that. They have really long foreskins.
I have seen really long foreskins before. Yeah. I like a long foreskin. I like the little
droop on the end where they kiss.
Yeah, the lips.
It all comes together.
I'm just wondering, because you're talking about going into a hospital and having general anesthetic. I assume that's... You could have that privately for an aesthetic reason, or maybe a religious reason. Do people have religious adult circumcisions in religions?
Yeah. I mean, if you convert.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Are there health reasons why you might have a circumcision?
The thing I've heard usually from circumcised people is that it's more hygienic to be circumcised. That doesn't seem true to me.
Okay. So, for example, right. Let's put it this way. We can get more into this in a bit, but sure, it's more hygienic to be circumcised in the same sense that, you know, if you. I can't even think of an analogy here. Look, if you don't wash, then yeah, it's absolutely much more hygienic to the point where you're like, oh yeah, let's do this.
Yeah,
like if saying you've got cleaner hands if you don't have any hands.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. If you cut off your fingers, you've got cleaner hands because there's less hand to get dirty, right?
Yeah.
No, but obviously the foreskin, it usually sits over the head of the penis, and you know your body has dead skin cells. There's oil and all of that sort of stuff, and that's where this idea of smegma comes from, right? I say this the idea of smegma.
Sorry, what?
Smegma.
What is smegma?
You don't know what smegma is?
No.
Oh, okay. Smegma
you
is.
You don't want to know.
Is it like dick cheese?
Yes, yeah, dick cheese.
It's dick cheese.
Right.
Dick cheese.
Okay, sure. I've heard of dick cheese.
Which you don't have to worry about as long as you wash.
Yeah, so, goodness me.
I'm so sorry.
No.
It's never particularly cheesy.
I didn't want to say that. I didn't want people listening to think we're being very silly. We're being serious, okay? We're talking about some serious stuff. We will get there. So, yeah, I mean, there can be a buildup of sort of oils and dead skin cells and stuff. That's this sort of like thick, white, I guess, cheesy substance that can be smelly and stuff, that can build up underneath the foreskin because, you know, there's no way for it to get out, you know, otherwise. But if you just simply do this really simple trick once a day, roll it back and give it a wash.
Yep.
And, you know, while you're doing that, you could also maybe, I don't know, hop in the shower and wash the rest of
wash
your body,
your
too.
Body.
And yeah, I would really recommend washing, you know, showering once a day. That's, you know, that's a pretty good practice to get into.
Yeah.
Yeah, as long as you do that, you should be fine.
I have a very sad story about someone. It's a friend of a friend, and she was taught as a child that she was never meant to touch her genital area for religious reasons, and she took that so to heart that she didn't clean herself. And that's where you get exactly what you're talking about with this like smegma stuff. If you have these sort of religious beliefs that are maybe they're designed for some reason, maybe like, you know, the idea of no sex before marriage was pre condoms and pre like there's some societal reason why, I don't know if there's any societal reason why saying no to masturbation, that just seems like an arbitrary thing that people said in order to kind of manipulate each other, but yeah, if you're taught something absolutist and then you don't have any nuance to it, yeah, you get these horrible situations.
Yeah, I mean, look, there are genuine reasons for circumcision, and yeah, like that kind of stuff where it's like very sort of prescriptive, like do not do this, is pretty much never okay, right? But I feel like there are reasons for circumcision, definitely, but they're kind of, I guess, exaggerated to some degree sometimes. So we'll get more into that in a little bit, because there's a whole list of them. There's loads to get into. So back to sort of, you know, why people are circumcised, like medically speaking, there are a few different reasons for that. One of the most common ones, I mean, really the most common one in adults, is phimosis. Do you know what that might be?
I've never heard of that.
Oh, is it if it's like too tight?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So you said too much. I don't think I've ever heard of anyone getting a circumcision because they have too much foreskin.
Other than aesthetically.
Aesthetically.
Maybe.
Aesthetically. Yeah, reason. Yeah. And, you know, I want to just now sort of at the beginning here, before we get into the depths of this and I start giving off the horrible, horrible opinions. before we get into that, I just want to say, like, if you're an adult and you think that circumcised penises look better and so you get a circumcision, by all means, go ahead, do that. Your body, your choice. I don't care. You do you, right? That's all good. I have no problem with adults, you know, making their choices for their own bodies that only affect them when there's, like, you know, no outside influence making them do whatever, you know, pressuring them into doing things, right? You make your choices. Go ahead, do it. Get a circumcision. I'm not going to stop you, right? I don't mind. So, yeah, I mean, back to the reasons for it. Phimosis, tight foreskin, that is the most common reason for adult circumcision. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the most common medical reason for adult circumcision. We'll get to the other reasons in a bit. But a tight foreskin is normal for babies and young boys, as I said, and they usually don't pull back until you're 5. Sometimes, and like by the age of 10, they won't pull back. And, like, you know, and but they still do end up pulling back, right? It can take a bit longer. Mm-hmm. Might not be anything to, it doesn't necessarily need to be something to worry about. You could obviously speak to your doctor about it and they can advise you, but from what I've read on the NHS, it could be fine. Like, there's not necessarily a need for a circumcision just because you've got a type 4 going up to the age of about 10 years old, right? But, you know, if sort of the end of the penis starts bulging or ballooning when you pee, if your foreskin is too tight, that could be an issue, or that is an issue rather. But the symptoms that kind of point to a tight foreskin being a problem, you can find them on the NHS website, would be swelling and tenderness, pain when peeing or a weak flow of pee, blood and urine, frequent UTIs, urinary tract infections, bleeding or a thick discharge from under the foreskin, or an unpleasant smell. That's the sign of infection, which is balanitis. Painful erections, which may make having sex difficult. So if you've got any of those sort of symptoms, then you should go speak to your doctor. Circumcision might help there. But a circumcision isn't the sort of the first port of call for something like that. Usually you would get sort of steroid creams or other sort of medical interventions before they move on to surgical, which is fairly normal. So there are some other complications of having a tight foreskin beyond those. So it could get stuck and not go back to its original position. That is going to be just painful, and that is considered a medical emergency. You go to A&E, you go to a doctor, get it sorted out. And that's called paraphimosis. And like the NHS says, like, quite literally, it's a medical emergency. Immediate treatment is needed to avoid serious complications like restricted blood flow to the penis. Mm. Restricted blood flow means cells dying, which is like necrosis. You do not want your cells dying because of restricted blood flow. That is not a good thing, especially on your penis. Go and see a doctor if that's happening, yeah? They might be able to bring it back to the usual position, or if they can't, they'll just operate. They'll remove it. Circumcision there. There are other medical reasons for a circumcision. If you've got frequent infections on the head of your penis, you could removing the foreskin might help there. As I said, paraphimosis. There's a lot of different ones that are kind of similar in terms of like having a tight foreskin and having sort of infections sort of due to that or surrounding that sort of thing. Yeah. And there's also cancer of the penis, which is a very rare type of cancer. And just from the NHS, it says where a red patch, wart-like growth, or ulcer appears on the end of the penis or under the foreskin. And in that case, removing, circumcision could help with that, just removing it. And there's also HIV prevention, which we can kind of talk about more in a bit. But there is evidence from, quite a few trials in Africa that circumcised men have a lower risk of getting HIV from sex with women, right? From sex with cis women. So cis men having sex with cis women, if you're circumcised, you've got a lower chance of catching HIV. But there's not a lot of evidence suggesting that holds true for other STIs. I have seen some things. I've seen some things like, I think it was, might have been syphilis and stuff as well. But that's sort of less substantiated than HIV. We're pretty sure that a circumcision can reduce the risk of HIV. Mm. I think by 50% as well. Yeah, wow. And obviously, in parts of Africa where HIV is really common, is a real problem, it's, you don't have access to things like PrEP, or you don't have access as easily to condoms and things like that. Absolutely, and you don't have easy access to sort of emergency anti-HIV antivirals, right? Well, you might not know this. In the UK, at least, we have pretty good access to HIV medication. So you've got access to PrEP, which will basically stop you from getting HIV if you come into contact with it. So a lot of men have sex with men, take that because they're at higher risk. So you just take that and you're going to be pretty safe from it. There's also medication if you've got HIV that can basically make you undetectable. It can bring the HIV, the level of the virus in your system down to undetectable levels, which means you can't pass it on to someone else. It's not possible. And there's also, I think, an emergency HIV medication which you can take if you believe you've had an exposure in the past, I think, a few days. I'm not sure specifically on the timeline there, but after a recent exposure, you could take that, and that you should avoid getting HIV, there.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea why having a circumcision makes you less likely to catch HIV?
We're not really sure, actually. Wow. So there are some ideas, I think. You know, like the idea that there is just more surface area if you've got a foreskin. So more surface area, sure. More cells, more chance for infection. That's one idea. There's also, you know, the fact that if you've got a foreskin, it kind of, there is, that's kind of a barrier, right? That kind of goes back up. So there's that as well, in that there's more chance of infection because you kind of seal it in. It's harder to, I think that's something that that has sort of been suggested. There's been lots of different suggestions, but I don't think there's one agreed upon, sort of proven, this is why this happens. What we do know is that circumcision can reduce it by, like, you know, 50%. Yeah. Obviously, in the parts of Africa where that is a problem, absolutely makes sense. Mm. Here in the UK or in the US, you know, reducing your risk from, like, maybe, like, what, 2% to 1%? You got to ask yourself, you know, for yourself, is that worth it? It's a choice that you make yourself as an adult, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what's, I think that's the most important thing here. That
depends on your lifestyle as well.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, your lifestyle, you make the decision yourself, right? You make, like, if you're informed, that's fine. Consent, bodily autonomy, all very important things. So those are the main sort of medical reasons. But then there's also non-medical reasons as well. We've spoken about aesthetics. Mm-hmm. So, you know, adults might choose to get circumcised just for the aesthetics. Parents might circumcise their children for aesthetics. But then there's also other elements as well, like religious elements. Do you know anything about that?
I really don't. I don't. I don't know why it is. Why do people get, like, I know why. I know that it's in Jewish faith. But
for a second, I thought you were saying that you had no idea. You didn't realize that some religions had a tradition of circumcision.
But I don't know what the. I don't know what the point is, or, like, what the sort of suggested, or, like, why is that meant to be a holy thing?
Oh, I think it's to show your covenant with God, I believe, at least with Judaism. I'm not sure on the exact specifics of it.
The same way of, like, sacrificing a lamb, like, you've done something drastic to show your faith.
Not necessarily doing something. I don't know if it's doing something drastic to show your faith. I think it's to be a part of the, is it the covenant, or a part of this, part of the sort of, I guess, the sort of chosen people, part of, like, you know, of, you know, that faith, to show that you're a part of that sort of group. You do this to show your devotion to God.
Right.
That's my understanding of it, at least. You know, that might be wildly off. I mean, ultimately, I think, I don't know if it's super important, the exact reasons why, because, you know, as you mentioned, Luke, like, a lot of these sort of religious rules and practices have reasons, you know, outside of the, like, obvious.
The real reason.
They have real reasons that are outside of the ones that are spoken about, you know, in the religious text and all of that sort of stuff, mm-hmm. in that, you know, it might be beneficial to circumcise your children to be circumcised if it can reduce your risk of STIs, right?
Yeah.
That might be beneficial. That might be why. Or, you know, for example, if you don't have running water and it's, you're generally just kind of dirty, or you don't have access to, like, you know, soaps and all that sort of stuff, then it could be genuinely cleaner to be circumcised. Yeah. So it's that might, like, be why, a reason behind the reason.
Yeah, and it's also, there's a few ways of thinking about it like that, in terms of, like, you can think about it from, like, religions often evolve, they're often involved for, like, the queen and, like, or, like, some leader setting out rules and then justifying those rules. This is the non-religious sort of interpretation of religion. Mm. Like, it's a way of getting a population to behave in a way that you want them to behave, like, in a way that they then are motivated to behave that way because they want to go to heaven or whatever.
Yeah.
Or it could be that, like, if you have, like, 50 cultures, some of them are not having sex before marriage, or some of them are circumcising or whatever.
Hmm.
And if there's any benefit to that, those are the ones that spread and stay alive. If a load of them are dying of STDs that they're getting because they aren't circumcised, or they're having loads of unparented children, and then don't sort of the structure of society breaks down, they're not going to be continuing into the next generation.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, to be honest, I don't know. I think it's probably, it's more likely that it's the cleanliness thing. That's something that people always come back to, that it's cleaner to be circumcised because you don't have the foreskin there, where underneath it you can build up the dead skin cells and you know, all of the sort of body oils and all of that sort of stuff. But when it comes to STIs, bear in mind, I just want to be absolutely clear. The only thing that I'm going to kind of confidently say that this reduces the risk of is HIV infection, right? That is the only thing that I feel confident saying it reduces the risk of. Potentially, hypothetically, it could reduce the risk of other STIs, but then, you know, in the ancient world, is that really a problem? Are they having a lot of, you know, premarital sex? I don't know. But the cleanliness aspect definitely seems, like, jumps out to me as being one of the most sort of likely.
But what do you mean by the cleanliness aspect? Because there's three ways that I can see that the cleanliness aspect, whilst the faith says we're doing this because of our covenant with God, and presuming the people who are then doing the circumcisions believe that and don't sort of double think their way into going, this is really about cleanliness, but we'll say it's about the So you've got option one, God says that circumcision is cleaner, and he doesn't trust you to think about that, so he says, circumcise yourselves in order to have a covenant with me. Or you have some leaders think that circumcision is cleaner, and they tell all the followers, circumcise your children, and we'll say it's because of God or something, but really it's about cleanliness. Or you've got some societies circumcised, and the ones that circumcised performed better because they didn't get as many infections and didn't die out. The ones that didn't circumcise died out, or didn't die out, but there was no. Or foot number four, I suppose, is that some societies circumcised and it gave some benefit in some ways, and they carried on doing it.
I think it's probably kind of more two-ish, three-ish, like the second or third thing that you mentioned. So, I mean, look, I would believe that the people that are sort of, you know, way back when, people that were sort of, I guess, not pushing circumcision, but promoting it, probably did have a genuine faith. But also, there are, in the sort of ancient world, or in places where you don't have access to the same sort of like hygiene as you would, you know, living where we are now at this current time period, that there are benefits to circumcision. So how it first came about, I don't know, man.
Imagine being the first person to suggest it.
Right?
Yeah. Everyone would be like,
yeah.
You want to chop off your end of your penis?
You first.
Yeah. I'd be like, you give it a go. You give it a go first. Let me see how it works out.
Yeah.
Then you guys all die of infections that you got from your sheathed penises.
Exactly. That's it, right? So is it, you know, I mean, it's difficult. It could be just multifaceted, right? I think absolutely. Because it's not just Judaism that sort of where that's a practice. Also, in, you know, a lot of Muslims are also circumcised, and I think in a lot of parts of Africa as well, like that, and that's outside of religion, a lot of parts of Africa circumcision is common. So I mean, I think, like, you know, it could be, it's probably a combination of both, of like people being like, well, it is cleaner, it's safer in these circumstances to be circumcised, and also a genuine belief that this is a demonstration of your faith, you know. I don't think they're mutually exclusive, is what I'm saying.
Okay,
I mean, it could be, I don't know, man. I don't know, maybe we'll hop back in time and speak to Abraham himself, you know. But those are sort of the religious reasons. And just briefly with the history of circumcision, I mentioned that at some point it might have just been the tip. So I don't know how sort of reputable this is. I haven't studied history. I don't know. I found this, I thought it was interesting. Don't take it as gospel. Check yourself before you add this into your head as one of your beliefs. But apparently, it says here, I'm just going to read this verbatim. This is from Just a Snip, A Social History of Male Circumcision, a paper published in 2007. It says, "But was or is male circumcision a relatively minor procedure? Crucially, Jewish circumcision now differs markedly from the originally instituted covenant. Until 300 BC, the ritual is recorded as calling only for the removal of the tip of the foreskin. However, when Jewish athletes traveled to Greece to compete in athletic events, they imitated their Greek hosts by pulling their remaining foreskins over the gland's penis and tying them closed with a ribbon or piece of string. Over time, this stretching is reported as resulting in a fully functioning foreskin. When the athletes returned home, Jewish elders were incensed to see their Hellenized foreskins. To put an end to the practice, they instituted the pariah, which involved not only the complete removal of the foreskin, but the tearing of the frenulum, which is, yeah, the if you've got one in your in your mouth as well. So it's just like if you pull your lips down if you're listening, and just feel this. There's this like very thin bit of skin attaches your sort of lip. To your
bottom teeth, yeah,
your gums. There is a similar thing on the underside of the penis, attaching the foreskin to the sort of head or the sort of end of the shaft of the penis, right? Yeah. So you sort of take that, right? Apparently, there was a removal of the foreskin and the tearing of the frenulum. Now, I don't know how true this is, and obviously, when it comes to Judaism, when it comes to Jewish people, there is often a lot of misinformation out there because for some reason. Some people do not like Jewish people very much, and that's a very serious problem.
No way.
And it makes it kind of difficult to find, I guess, good information when it comes to Jewish practices and stuff, especially things that cast Jewish people in maybe not the best light.
Yeah.
You've always got to take that with a grain of salt. Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe that's the case. Maybe it's not. This isn't a history podcast. I'm not sure. Check out yourself. There you go. So, that's... kind of like, you know, an overview of circumcision and, you know, where it came from, what it is, all of that sort of stuff. I kind of want to talk a little bit about sort of more about the benefits and the effects, the sort of benefits, the complications, the effects generally of circumcision. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just a quote from Scientific Evidence Dispels False Claims About Circumcision, 2014. It's a paper. It says, benefits include protection against urinary tract infections, penile inflammation, inferior hygiene, phimosis, and paraphimosis. And then I've also mentioned the reduced risk of HIV in heterosexual men. But also, we haven't really studied men having sex with men, apparently. We've not had done a lot of studies on how circumcision impacts, you know, that group of people.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean... there are benefits to circumcision, but let's go through those benefits. And again, I'm not saying this as a reason to not get a circumcision yourself. If you want to be circumcised, that is your prerogative. You can absolutely do that. But I just want to go through these benefits because people promote this as a way to sort of convince others into doing it to themselves or their children. And I don't take an issue with anyone doing it to themselves, but I do take issue with people doing it to children. So let's go ahead and walk through this, right? So protection against urinary tract infections. How common are UTIs amongst people with penises?
Oh, not very.
Not very, right?
No, not very.
Not terribly common. And let's talk about, I want to be quite clear here. We're talking about the Western world. And when we say that, we generally mean Western Europe, UK, US, Canada. Places like that, basically places where most of the white people are, right? You know,
sure,
yeah, the places that capitalism, money, all of that stuff, you know, like the
developed economies,
the ones that, you know, went to other places, stole their stuff, all that lovely stuff.
Most importantly, places with sanitation, clean water, like a health service, access to medication, things like that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm just building up the reasons why they got that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in places like that where you've got healthcare, hygiene, healthcare, access to, like, you know, products and infrastructure and all of these other things that help with hygiene and all of that, how much of a benefit does this confer, right? You know, UTIs. I don't think I've ever had a UTI in my life. I'm one data point, but, like, you know, I mean, I don't think I've ever, like, and, you know, I speak to, you know, we all chat with our friends and stuff. I don't think I've ever known a friend to have, a male friend to have a UTI and for that to be a serious problem.
Not to my knowledge. None of my friends. Nor me.
Every single person, pretty much every single person I know that does not have a penis has had a UTI multiple times.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, sure.
Every single one I know, I think. Yeah. Multiple times. So, like, we're weighing that there. It's like, okay, is it really worth circumcising a child to avoid UTIs? Maybe not. Penile inflammation, if the benefits of circumcision were so great when it came to penile inflammation and phimosis and paraphimosis,
we would have evolved to not have foreskins.
Not even that. The NHS would be saying, do this. Like, that would be a yeah. recommended thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when you look at these health services and all of that, their recommendation is, do we want?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we've had plenty of, like, I mean, look, 1/3 of the world is circumcised. Do you really think that if there were so many benefits, like, put it this way, if there were so many benefits to circumcision, if 1/3 of the world is circumcised, we would imagine that the other 2/3 of the world, and when I say of the world, obviously I'm talking about people that can be circumcised, not yeah. you know, the entire population. One third of, you know, the males in the world, people with penises in the world, are circumcised. You don't think we would spot, like, a pretty serious difference between them and the other 2/3?
Mm. Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
But I feel like it seems that the benefits that are conferred are kind of almost flattened out by, you know, hygiene, healthcare,
yeah. Yeah.
all of that sort of stuff. Because, as I mentioned, a 50% reduction in risk, I believe it is, for contracting HIV, as a sort of cisgendered man who has sex with a cisgendered woman, right? If you're circumcised, if you're circumcised, you've got half the chance of getting HIV, essentially, right? Just take that.
Mm-hmm.
The studies I've seen also look at it sort of, I don't think they've actually done them necessarily in the US, but they've kind of looked at it, and it's like, if you take that 50% reduction in risk in, and I've mentioned this already, in somewhere like the US or the UK, you're changing from 1-2%, or 2-1%, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not a massive reduction.
And that's
it's not
also on average, and so that doesn't, so like if you're exactly. monogamous, you're fine.
If you're probably. Using condoms, you're fine.
Yeah. yeah.
If you, well, I mean, especially, think about it this way, if you're at increased risk for HIV, in the UK, you can go to your GP. I'm pretty sure if you're at increased risk, you can go to your GP and say, hey, give me PrEP, and they'll do that.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
not even your GP. I'm pretty sure you could go to a sexual health clinic. Yeah, yeah. And they'll do that. So when you have access to these things, you don't need to, you have access to this as sort of the medical procedures or to the, you know, to the sort of equipment that you need for hygiene. You don't necessarily need the surgical procedure. And again, that doesn't mean that circumcision is bad or yeah. what. Do it. That's perfectly fine. Just you don't need to have this reasoning behind it. You know
as
I mean?
Far as we know, having an uncircumcised penis is not a commonly stated risk factor for HIV.
No.
It's not like the NHS is going, you need Imagine. To take PrEP if you've yeah. got a foreskin.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. They're not delineating between, or differentiating, sorry, between, you know, men have sex with men with foreskins and without.
Yeah. Do
you know what I mean? It's like, exactly. When we talk about, it's interesting here because this paper that says, that's talking about scientific evidence dispels false claims about circumcision, that's the title of the paper. They're talking about the false claims being against circumcision or against the benefits of circumcision.
Mm.
And they said that the benefits include, you know, protection against inferior hygiene, which is just like, which is so baffling to me because
just wash
it's like, okay, this is going to be an analogy that people might be upset with, but it's kind of like teaching young girls to fight rather than just teaching boys not to harass young girls.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you don't, maybe you don't need to send your daughter to karate classes and give her mace and you know, keys and a whistle and all of that. You could just sit down your young boys and say, hey, here's how we respect other people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, sort of. I mean, your individual young girl, you cannot suddenly change the world for her.
Yeah.
And so you might want to send her to karate classes, possibly. But also,
I mean, on a sort of more societal level,
yeah.
it's you're solving the problem more. You're sort of solving the problem more easily if you go to, like, you know, the actual root cause of it, yeah. rather than trying to solve.
So you can't,
something related.
As somebody, like, it's not
the
government who's sending women to karate classes. It's like worried parents and friends.
But it is. It's
also this website you're reading might be looking at this from a more sort of like broad societal perspective of like, how could we reduce the risk of infections?
No. This article is entirely just about how good circumcision is.
Good it is for you individually, or how good it is as a cultural practice?
Okay, hold on. Let me just quickly go back through this. Right, it's a response to a letter that was opposing infant male circumcision. So we're kind of getting into the meat of this episode. So why don't we just hop right into it? I have no problem with circumcision. Right, mm-hmm. I'm not doing this episode because I don't want people to be circumcised.
Mm-hmm.
I have a very distinct problem with infant male circumcision.
Yeah. Yes, which as is, do I, by the way.
Which is, yeah, I'm sure you do. Which is the taking of a baby boy and circumcising that boy. Like, this to me is an odd thing to do. In the best case, it's an odd thing to do. I understand if it's part of your religious practice and all of that sort of stuff, and that's fine, except it isn't, because you really, realistically, I think you should probably be waiting until someone is old enough to consent. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And bear in mind, this is not me going out against Jewish people or Muslims. I also take issue with Catholics, for example, bringing kids into the church, you know, with communion and all of that stuff at the age of like sort of five and whatnot. Like, I'm against that too. So do not think that this is some prejudice I have against sort of Judaism or Islam or even religion in general. It's not. This is a bodily autonomy issue for me. I oppose this to the same degree that I oppose corrective. And for anyone listening, I'm saying that with the most dripping sense of sarcasm I can. Corrective surgery on intersex children. Like, I oppose basically all of that, you know? And this paper that I'm talking about, Luke, it's not talking about, like, you know, here's the broad benefits of this across. It's saying, hey, you said that infant male circumcision has no benefits. Here are the benefits of circumcision. And if you're trying to pull up the benefits of circumcision and trying to say, well, here's why we should perform unnecessary surgery on infant children who cannot consent, you need to have a pretty good reason to back it up. And if your reason is, well, if he doesn't clean himself, you'll be better off. It's not, I mean, it doesn't really hold water for
me. Teach him to clean himself. So easy.
Instead of cutting off his foreskin for cleanliness, if that's your reasoning, teach him how to clean it. You know what I mean? And I guess, like, to be absolutely clear here, it's none of these issues are with circumcision itself. You know what I mean? Like, I could absolutely go into the complications that surround circumcision, and I'm happy to talk about the benefits of circumcision, but ultimately those are absolutely irrelevant to me. I just don't care whether it's beneficial or I don't care about the benefits or really the complications hugely, because the benefits are not so great that they override the fact that you're violating the bodily autonomy of a child.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the main issue for me. Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
He's ringing again. Why is he ringing this time, Corey?
He's ringing for After Dark, Luke.
Why have we gendered our ad bell, Corey?
Because he's a boy, and I want to respect him, just like I respect After Dark, our sister show to this podcast, Sci Guys. After Dark is what happens after Sci Guys ends. We just chat about whatever we want to chat about.
If you've ever been listening to Sci Guys and gone, God, I wish there were less facts, then you can listen to After Dark. I wish there were more opinions in this show.
More philosophy and politics.
Yes, After Dark is the show where Corey and I sit down, and maybe with a guest sometimes, sit down and discuss just more sort of floaty, woo-woo-y ideas about things we think with our brains.
And where can they watch this wonderful, wonderful show, Luke?
Well, they can listen to it and watch it at patreon.com/ Sci Guys, our Patreon, where you can also support us and help us keep doing this thing that you apparently like us doing.
Did you say patreon.com/Sci Guys?
Yes, I think I did. I think I did say patreon.com/Sci Guys.
Well, if you want to listen to After Dark, it seems like you should get to patreon.com/Sci Guys.
That's patreon.com/Sci Guys, in case you weren't paying attention.
Now pay attention, because we're about to start the show.
Oh, my attention has been paid and will continue to be paid until the end when I go home.
Again, there are benefits to circumcision. I'm not saying that there aren't any benefits to circumcision. All I'm calling into question is whether those benefits are actually substantial enough to sort of, whether those benefits are substantial enough, right? Because do they make a big difference? Do they make a huge difference? Because if there's not a massive benefit, then it doesn't really matter here, right?
And are there other ways of achieving those goals without lobbing off the end of a penis?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't want to talk about this again. I want to be very clear. I don't want to talk about this as though circumcision is a bad thing. Circumcision itself is not my problem. I have no problem with circumcision in and of itself. I have a problem with
baby
performing performing surgery on a child without consent. And a cosmetic, generally, because, okay, I say cosmetic because are the benefits so great that they reach past sort of like, you know, sort of almost incidental to being actually medically relevant? Do they? From what I've read, it doesn't seem to be that they are terribly medically relevant in, you know, sort of the societies, the society that we live in, you know, where you've got access to healthcare and hygiene and all of that sort of stuff. But let's talk about the complications. So the complications, they are rare. And I mean, I'll read this out verbatim. I'm pretty sure this is from the NHS. In the UK, complications after circumcisions carried out for medical reasons are rare, and most men don't experience any significant problems. Apart from the initial swelling, bleeding and infection are the two most common problems associated with circumcision. There you go. So that's it. Bleeding and infection. And, you know, how common is that? Really not very common. It's pretty rare. 1 in 10 and 1 in 50 chance, between a 1 in 10 and 1 in 50 chance that you'll experience bleeding and infection. Right. So, I mean, obviously bleeding. Right. That's not a huge issue. You've just had surgery.
It's not surprising.
It's going to bleed a bit. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it that should be fine. Infection is worse. But again, we're pretty good at dealing with infections. And also, there is the chance of infection with, you know, if you don't have a circumcision as well. So, you know, weighing those up, it's not too much of an issue. There are other possible complications, and this is from the NHS, and I found kind of conflicting information on this, because this is a really heated topic, actually. And, you know, I think over the past couple of weeks and over the next few weeks, we're going to be talking about a few different topics that have a lot of heated discussion around them that make it really difficult to discern what information is trustworthy and what information is not. Because, you know, there's obviously people with agendas and people are trying to convince you of something. And so they'll skew data in a different way. Like, I've seen the same people talk about the same things, absolutely the same things, and talk about them completely differently, you know, like. Here we go. So permanent reduction in sensation in the head of the penis, particularly during sex, tenderness around the scar, the need to remove stitches that haven't dissolved. Occasionally, another operation is needed to remove some more skin from around the head of the penis. So, you know, the last three there, tenderness around the scar and the need to remove stitches and another operation to remove excess skin. I don't think that's a huge issue. You know, those are just general, I guess, sort of surgical complications. They're barely even complications. It's just, your surgery didn't go absolutely 100% to plan. Mm. It's went maybe like 98% to plan. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So those ones aren't an issue. The permanent reduction in sensation of the head of the penis, particularly during sex. Now, that is something that people often talk about, right? People say it's not okay to circumcise, you know, infants because that will lead to that knock-on effect when they're adults. Now, I have found studies that have said, that have shown that adult circumcision results in increased sensation, an increased pleasure during sex. Mm. Now, that is interesting to me because I feel like those studies, again, can be kind of biased. And, you know, maybe some of them are taking into account some of these things I'm about to mention, but I haven't seen it like very clearly mentioned in a lot of the reviews that I've looked at, in some of the studies that I've looked at as well. So think about it this way. We really don't have any way of measuring the difference in sensation between someone that has been circumcised, you know, let's say at birth, like as an infant, and someone that hasn't been circumcised as an infant. Because someone that's been circumcised as an infant doesn't have anything to compare it to, right? And, you know, you can't compare it to someone else because pleasure is subjective. Right. You know, it's very difficult. It's going to be very, very difficult to say, oh, yeah, there's a slight reduction in pleasure if all you know is that, you know, this is the level of pleasure that I can achieve. And obviously it doesn't result in being unable to have any sort of like unable to orgasm at all. Right. That would be incredibly serious. That's not the case. But it would make sense that there is a reduction in sensitivity there. But whether sensitivity directly relates to sexual pleasure is another thing. Apparently, sensitivity of an area doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be, it's going to make sex way more pleasurable, obviously, right? But it is something to take into account, because if you think about it, the foreskin covers the head of the penis, it protects it. And I don't know if you've ever compared a circumcised penis to an uncircumcised penis. An uncircumcised penis is a little bit more calloused on, they tend to be a little bit more calloused on the head of the penis a circumcised penis tends to be a little bit more calloused on the head than an uncircumcised penis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because obviously if your foreskin is protecting you from your underwear and all and the air and all of that sort of stuff, there's going to be a sort of slight difference in how the skin is,
the texture.
Yeah, exactly. And so that could reduce sensitivity. But is that a huge issue? It's kind of unclear. And this is where the difficulty comes in, because it's just one paper says this and another paper says another thing. Like, it's back and forth over the sensitivity argument, you know? But the issues that I did find is that in papers that looked at adult men that have been circumcised, they said that there's no... when they talk about the no reduction in sensitivity, they're all... it seems to be based on studies on adult men who have been circumcised. And that's interesting to me, because what do you think is the problem with gauging the sensitivity, you know, after infant male circumcision using adult male circumcision? Like, can you think of any issues with that experimental design?
Sorry, you mean gauging the sensitivity of adult male sex based on people who are circumcised as adults?
Yes.
Well, it's a different thing. You've had 20 years of your penis not having a foreskin on, like you say, getting exposed to things, rubbing against your boxers and your skin on the penis, adapting to that situation. That's not the same thing as you recently having had your foreskin cut off and then comparing that and using it to justify child circumcision. It's just not the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else? And like, there's one other very clear issue that jumps out to me, and I feel like as soon as I say it, it's going to feel like very obvious. So it's the fact that, why would an adult man choose to get circumcised?
Because they've converted to a religion, probably.
Because they've converted to a religion, but also potentially complications with their foreskin.
Yeah. Okay.
Complications that might reduce sexual pleasure. Like, you know what I mean? Like, unless these studies are being performed on men who have, as adults, chosen to get circumcised for religious reasons or purely aesthetic reasons.
Or for the purposes of a study.
Or for the purposes of a study.
You get 10 people hard, who are willing to just have it cut off for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Right? And so that to me is odd, because one of the things I read, and this is not a direct quote, it's a slight paraphrasing, but this is almost entirely what it said. It said that, of course, they said there's no reason to believe that this would be any different between adult male circumcision and infant male circumcision in terms of pleasure.
Mm-hmm. And plenty of reason to think that.
There's plenty of reason.
Loads of reason. Yeah, like, 20 years worth of reason.
Yeah. 20 years, exactly, right? And it's like, you know, I mean, it's just, it's so odd to me that is how we're sort of defending this, that, oh, well, actually, no, there isn't a reduction in pleasure. There's actually an increase in pleasure. We know that because we've looked at adult, like,
adult males.
You're
also comparing a penis that has grown with a foreskin on versus a penis that's grown not with a foreskin on. Yeah. I don't know what the differences might be, but you've got X number of years worth of, like, development. You're not born with an adult penis.
No, absolutely.
You're born with a baby penis, and then it develops over time. Yeah. And that might develop differently if there's a foreskin there all the time or not.
Yeah, yeah. And this is what's mentioned as well in a lot of papers.
Especially
if
the first 5 years it's covered over.
It's covered over, yeah. Exactly. And what's mentioned often is that there's a lot of nerve endings in the foreskin, and it can be like that can be pleasurable in and of itself. But I feel like all of these arguments, they make sense, and they can be strong arguments. Great. Fantastic. Not the argument that I would go for, okay? The argument that I would go for when it comes to opposing infant male circumcision is very simple and very, very straightforward, okay? Bodily autonomy is one of the most important things. Like, it is a basic, basic human right. And that is the foundation of many, many of my beliefs. Bodily autonomy is a strong argument for trans people being allowed to have access to the care that they need. Mm. Bodily autonomy is a strong foundation for the argument that people that could get pregnant deserve the right to have an abortion, right? Bodily autonomy is a really, really, really important sort of concept. And performing surgery on an infant, whether it's because you think their genitals don't look the way that they should in the case of intersex children, or whether you think that their genitals don't look the way that they should in the case of just kids that you're going to circumcise, that's not okay. Because the person that you're circumcising should be able to choose for themselves, you know? Mm-hmm. And there are so many reasons for it. Like, there's religious reasons, and I don't think that's a strong enough justification. You should not be allowed, I think, at all, to permanently alter a child's genitalia, like, for any reason outside of strictly medical. And mm-hmm. this is where we get to the justification, the flawed justification for infant male circumcision, because they'll talk about the benefits. People will say that, you know, the benefits outweigh the risks. I mean, I was reading a study specifically that was talking about the benefits outweighing the risk. It says scientific evidence dispels false claims about circumcision. That study I was talking about earlier. And yeah, it says that there are many benefits to circumcision and it's very low risk. Sorry, hold on. That's not a way to justify this, right? You don't weigh the benefits up against the risks and say, well, the benefits outweigh the risks, let's go and do it. It's a very low risk procedure.
The question is whether you should be doing it.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it's very
it's a very low risk procedure, but it's also a very low benefit procedure as well, yeah. Right?
Corey, it's a very low risk procedure to give rhinoplasties to all babies,
yeah,
because their bones in their nose are not hard yet.
Mm.
So it's very low risk. And it's, what's the other one?
Benefits.
There are benefits. Well, they're going to have really sexy noses when they grow up. And it's low risk because the nose is soft. So let's just do it.
Oh,
let's
sure.
do it. Rhinoplasties for all babies?
Yeah, sure.
On day
Why
three.
Not?
Well, this is what, like, it's, what I don't understand here is that it seems as though what is happening here is people are starting from the end point of, I want to protect infant male circumcision.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, whether it's through aesthetic reasons or religious reasons, they want to defend this practice, right? Because it's very common in America. So often I've heard straight American women say, oh yeah, uncircumcised penises are ugly because they're so used to the alternative, which is so strange to me.
I've heard straight, like, non-American women say that in this country as well.
Really?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
it's, I mean, I've most commonly heard that from Americans. I mean, it's less common in this country, so you're more likely to see an uncircumcised penis here than you are, you know, in
America,
the US.
Yeah.
Now, my issue is that, like, ultimately, whatever reason you've got for it is irrelevant because it's not your penis. People are like, oh well, we want them to match. We don't want the kid to feel different from their, you know, their siblings or their parent. So we want them to look the same, so they all look the same. But it's just like that is not enough of a justification to permanently alter a child's genitals. Like, it just isn't. Whatever the benefits you're saying here are, all of these benefits that are honestly in our modern society with access to, you know, all of the wonderful things we've got access to, they are almost irrelevant, right? Like, if you have a foreskin, you'll get along just fine. If you don't have a foreskin, you'll probably get along just fine too. I mean, you will just get along fine. The issue is in choice, in making that choice for someone else, in forcing it on someone else. I do not want to live in a world where no one is circumcised. That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm not saying that this is an evil practice that shouldn't be allowed. I'm saying that we should allow people to have that choice for themselves, for their own bodies, you know? Literally, this paper that I've got sitting in front of me, Do the Benefits of Male Circumcision Outweigh the Risks? A Critique of the Proposed CDC Guidelines. It says the standard heuristic for evaluating non-therapeutic surgery, which is surgery that's performed in without, you know, there being any disease to sort of cure, mm-hmm. Is not benefit versus risk of surgical complications, but rather benefit versus risk of harm. In this case, at least one relevant harm would be the inherent loss of a healthy, functional, and erotogenic penile structure amounting to approximately 30 to 50 centimeters squared of densely innervated elastic genital tissue in the adult organ. Since this tissue can be manipulated during sex and foreplay, resulting in a range of concomitant sense perceptions, and since it protects the sensitive head of the penis from abrasion as well as from drying out over time, its surgical removal entails a number of arguably adverse outcomes, even if the circumcision is properly performed. This is kind of the entire point here. No matter what benefits or complications you're talking about, you're weighing it up, like, entirely incorrectly here. Do the benefits actually confer a better life outcome? You know, you can say you've got a reduced chance of HIV, you've got reduced chance of poor hygiene affecting you, you've got a reduced chance of these kinds of infections. But do any of those things that you reduce the chances of, do any of those things seriously impact those that don't have this procedure?
Mm.
They don't. And that's not even getting to the fact that, you know, at least some of these are done with little or no anesthetic because it's hard to anesthetize babies. You know, it's to me, just an odd thing that we do. Why are we cutting off parts of people's bodies without asking them and making sure they're okay with it? It's the same as piercing a kid's ear. Except piercing a kid's ear is something that like is not very noticeable and is unlikely to affect their lives in a massive way. You know, people look at people piercing babies' ears as being very sort of like as very tacky often, and sometimes there are religious elements to it and stuff, so I don't want to like offend anyone on that front, but ultimately maybe we shouldn't be making permanent changes to a child's body just because we want to, you know.
Just popped out, it's all fresh and new, leave Come it on. alone.
leave it some choices, mate. Come on.
I'm going to tattoo, like, put it this way. How about this? I choose to tattoo on my baby, left on their left hand and right on their right hand. The benefit of that is that they'll never have to learn their left from their right.
And it's very low risk.
It's incredibly low risk.
Yeah, it is.
And there's no reason not to now. So now I'm going to go do that.
There are benefits.
Absolutely. So, yeah. And I kind of want to talk about FGM because, I mean, do you know anything about FGM, either of you?
Not too much, no.
No. Well, FGM stands for female genital mutilation, and often it's compared to circumcision. I just want to hop in before anyone gets in the comments or whatever and say, they're not really the same thing at all. They are both, surgical alterations of the genital region. But FGM, there's different levels to it, but generally it is... It's far worse than sort of infant male circumcision. They're not really... It's comparing apples to oranges. So while I oppose both of them, I recognize that they are very different things, and we shouldn't be talking about them as being on the same level. Absolutely, if you're an anti-infant male circumcision sort of activist, or you want to, you know, if you stand against that, by all means, stand against it, but probably try not to compare it to FGM whilst doing so, you know? Yeah, so to conclude... Well, what do you think? What do you think is the conclusion here?
Well, I think the conclusion is that Corey doesn't really like child circumcision, and neither do we, really.
Seems a bit pointless.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, not pointless, but you can leave them to make the choice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
seems a bit kinder.
Absolutely. And I think that's about time to move on to the quickfire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun! Willy edition.
The rules of the quickfire quiz are the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question between the two of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer after finish asking the question wins. What do they win, Jamp?
One circumcision, if you so choose.
That's
we
very
forgot
kind.
To talk about how they put like circumcised penis stuff in like face cream.
Oh, they do that, don't they?
Isn't that weird? They put foreskin in face cream. That's my buzzer. That's my buzzer. My whole thing.
And Jamp, what's your buzzer?
Bonk.
God, my buzzer's going to take ages.
So the question is, what is phimosis?
We forgot to talk about how they put balls in, no, foreskin in face cream.
Jamp, I think you got that one.
I think I got in there first. It's when your foreskin is too tight around the head of your penis.
That's very true. Congratulations. You get a little circumcision, if you so wish.
I don't choose. Oh,
too late.
Come on.
No, but if... No! 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 No!
That's
done.
Well, that is it. But before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with a very special thank you to executive producers Danito and Glitch Rabbit. And thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe to new episodes every Monday. And why not leave us a nice wee review? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys. Or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
You can follow me at Jamkin everywhere.
You can follow me at Luke Cutforth everywhere.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Come on, Jamp. Time to go get a circumcision.
No, not again.
Yes.
No.
There was a bit left. We have to get the rest of it.